If you have a Bible with you, would you take it out, please, or open it up on your phone and turn to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 13. We'll refer to a couple of other scriptures before we get there, but that will be the first scripture that we read together from our Bibles. Matthew chapter 7, starting in verse 13. Over the past several years, I've thought a lot about my privilege. As a straight, white, middle-class American man, I haven't had much choice in the matter. And I'm hesitant to use politically charged, non-biblical, imprecise language in a sermon. But in this case, it's been helpful to me. And maybe it can be helpful to you as well, especially as it relates to living out our faith and interacting with others, especially those less privileged than us. I'm grateful, though I was forced to against my will maybe, I'm grateful that I've been forced to think about this concept. And it has led in my life to reflection and study and prayer and thankfulness. It has not, as perhaps the world might intend, caused me to think less of myself or others. I'm committed to seeking unity as Christians, not division, whether by race or any other physical attribute. And I'm not embarrassed or ashamed of who I am or the advantages that I've had in my life, but I am more aware of those advantages, my God-given advantages especially, and what those advantages, now that I'm more aware of them, what they require of me in God's service. But before we get into specifics, let's define some terms this evening. When we're talking about privilege, what is privilege? Well, this is the dictionary definition. A special right, advantage, or immunity granted or available only to a particular person or group. And of course, in our culture, this word is much more charged and has come to mean more than that. But as stated here, privilege implies two things, at least. Privilege implies something that you have that many others do not have, an inherent advantage of some kind. But that's not all. The modern societal usage, at least as it's used in America, also implies something that you have that you had nothing to do with, that you had no choice or action in the matter in order to bring about this advantage. It's just a result of environmental factors over which you have no control, and yet you are gaining from those advantages. So, from that definition, I want you to spend just a moment in personal reflection. What is your greatest privilege? What is something that you have that many others do not, and something that you have that you had nothing to do with? You didn't choose it, it wasn't by your own action, and yet you have this advantage over many others in life. Our first thought, perhaps, and I've thought about this over several years now before it became a lesson. And my first thought was, well, my greatest privilege maybe is salvation in Jesus Christ. And there can be little doubt that this is the greatest advantage and blessing in my life. But as privilege is defined in our culture, it doesn't really fit in that concept. If you're talking about God's graciousness in giving me the opportunity to be saved, that's something over which I have no control. God offers that. But it is something that is freely available to everyone. Titus chapter 2 and verse 11 says, "For the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men." We're all privileged to have this opportunity, and there is no partiality with God. This is not a privilege that God gives to some and not to others. We all have the opportunity to be saved. And that's God's desire. He desires all men to be saved and come to a knowledge of the truth. So this is something that is available to all, which would not fit that definition of privilege. On the other hand, if you're not just talking about the opportunity to be saved, if you're talking about actually being saved, well, that too is certainly rare, something that I have that many others in the world do not have. But if we read in Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 and 14, we see that that's not all. "Enter by the narrow gate," he says, "for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it." there are few who find salvation in Jesus Christ. But notice the very first word that we read in verse 13. Enter. This is something that we have some choice in the matter. We are choosing to enter by this gate. Now, obviously, the Lord is the one who allows that choice to even be possible through the blood of His Son. But it is still a choice that we have to make to accept God's will and follow God's paths. And so even salvation in Jesus Christ, as great of an advantage as it is, a great of a blessing as it is, doesn't really fit this idea of privilege. So, what is the greatest advantage that you have that others don't, that you had nothing to do with? What's your greatest privilege? Well, after much reflection, again, after years of reflection at this point, this is what I've determined in my own life, and maybe this is something that applies to you. I was born into a stable family with two godly parents who love each other, love me, and love the Lord. For Reagan McClinney, that is the greatest privilege that I've had and have in my life. I had no control over that. I had no control over what family I was born into. If you want to put it in these terms, it is only by the grace of God that this is true of me. And this privilege is more powerful and more important than any other thing outside of my control in this physical life. Think about it in these terms. Because this is true, God has set me up for success. And even if I was, so many other things that we think about in regard to privilege, even if I was smarter or less smart than I am, even if I was a different gender or a different race, even if I was of a higher or lower socioeconomic status, even if I was born into a different time or place in the world, if I was better looking or worse looking than I am, if I had a physical, mental, or learning disability, had different struggles or temptations than I do in my life, if I was born with a different personality, or so many other things that people view as characteristics of privilege, all of those things would be secondary to this reality. I have no control over the family into which I've been born. And sadly, there are few, and probably fewer and fewer families like this in the world today. And it is a blessing, an advantage, a privilege for which I am eternally grateful. And there are a number of examples of biblical characters who were raised in such homes. This is not an exhaustive list by any means, but consider some of these biblical characters. Obed, who was the son of Ruth and Boaz, the grandfather of David, he had two strong, faithful, worthy parents who loved one another, loved him, and loved the Lord. And apparently there were several generations of faithfulness here, because we know that Jesse, the father of David, who was the son of Obed, was a man of God too. And that brings us to David himself. David was born into such a home. And not just on his father's side with Jesse. If we read carefully in the Psalms, we learn something about David's mother as well. I like the way the Good News translation translates Psalm 86 and verse 16. David says to God, "Turn to me and have mercy on me. Strengthen me and save me, because I serve you just as my mother did." David had two parents who apparently loved one another, certainly loved the Lord and loved him. Moses is another great example. He was super privileged, wasn't he? He was privileged to be a prince in Egypt and all of the advantages that came with that. But his privilege started with loving godly parents. And maybe he's the poster child for using the privileges that he was given in his life in service to God. On the other hand, we have Samson, who was super privileged as well. But again, it started with his loving godly parents. And maybe he's the poster child for just the opposite, for abusing and wasting the privilege that he was given, at least for the vast majority of his life. If we think about in the New Testament, John the Baptist had two faithful parents who raised him in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Now, I understand that not everybody has this privilege. Not everybody here had this privilege in growing up. And obviously, you don't have to have this in order to do God's will. Esther comes to mind in the Old Testament. A an orphan girl raised by a cousin in what appears to be a very secular household, who grows up to save the whole people of God because of her faith and faithfulness and commitment to do what was right. In the New Testament, Timothy immediately comes to mind. He was not privileged. He was raised in a mixed race, mixed culture, mixed faith household. And yet he turns out incredibly good in service to God. And praise God for that. And give credit to his mother, grandmother, and him, but most of all to God for making it so. And so maybe for you, your privilege is not this kind of family with two godly parents. Maybe you have one godly parent who is absolutely committed to raising you in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And maybe that's your privilege as it was with Timothy. And to those not into this type of family environment, that is not ultimately the be-all, end-all in your faithfulness. But when God the Father sent Jesus to earth, this is one of the few privileges that was granted him. You think about Jesus. Jesus was a poor man from a hated minority group with little access to education, living in a backwater province of the Roman Empire. His mother became pregnant before marriage. Now, we know the truth about that, but the world did not. He was literally born in a barn. He was hunted and oppressed by powerful people at an early age. He moved several times while he was very young. He was not good looking. He was not a desirable person naturally. He was not a privileged person. And this was not a fertile environment for the most important person who has ever lived to grow up in when looking at it from that perspective. In fact, I think Isaiah hints at this if you turn to Isaiah chapter 53. Turn to Isaiah 53. There was nothing inherently special about Jesus' person as a human being. No special privilege, nothing that stands out. But in Isaiah 53, notice in verses 2 and 3, "For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant and a root out of dry ground." Is that a fertile environment for a plant to grow in? Dry ground, just this root that's sticking up? No. "He has no form or comeliness." This idea of the way he appears, what he looks like, there's no splendor to him. There's no beautiful appearance when we look at him. And when we see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him. Externally, there was nothing to attract us to Jesus. And you think about his circumstances, you think about his environment. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised and we did not esteem him. And we could go on and read about Jesus further as Isaiah is prophesying about him. But here's the point I want to make with that. Jesus had little privilege with one notable exception. He was born into a stable family with two godly parents who loved each other, loved him, and loved the Lord. And when God chose the adoptive parents for his only begotten son, this is what he chose, showing the importance of this environment. So what? Oh, okay, great, Reagan, good job. You've told us all about what you think this is. What in the world does that have to do with us? Well, consider some things with me this evening, if you would. Certainly, if this is something that applies to you, but even if it isn't, may I suggest that we all need to be aware. This is not something immediately apparent like sex or race, or even something that is quickly discerned like nationality or education level. This is not something that the media, whether social media or traditional media, beats into our heads daily. We have to be mindful of it in ourselves and in others. This is something that we should be aware of. Why? Why does it matter? Why should we be aware? Because of the next five things in this list. We need to be aware so that we can be thankful if you have had or have this privilege. We are conditioned in our society to be angry victims That's the most ideal position to be in. I've had it so hard, my life is so difficult. And we are encouraged to make our victimhood a kind of competition with other people. My life has been tougher than yours. And maybe it has. Maybe your life has been tougher than mine. But if this is true of you, you have no right to act like you've been dealt a bad hand, because you were given pocket aces right off the bat. None of our lives are perfect, and none of our parents are perfect. And maybe there are some hang-ups that you have with your parents. But I would ask this. Did they love you? Did they love each other? Did they love the Lord? If you answered yes, especially if you answered yes to all three of those questions, may I humbly say you need to get over yourself. If you are wallowing in self-pity when you came from this kind of home, the only way I can describe you is ungrateful. You've been abundantly blessed. Blessed beyond measure, pressed down and overflowing. And there are dozens of people, even in this very room, who would trade the home they grew up in for one like yours in a heartbeat. Who have had to overcome so many powerfully difficult things because this is not the kind of home that they found themselves in. You have privilege. In a true and real sense. And so, your first assignment, whatever your age for the lesson tonight, assignment, suggestion, I'm suggesting this. If your parents are living, and if your parents loved you and introduced you to the Lord, write them or text them and call them and thank them for the spiritual advantage that they've given you. I know your parents weren't perfect. Mine weren't either. But they were this. And I am so incredibly grateful for it. Number three, we need to be aware, we need to be thankful, but we need to be active as well. Because you will be judged if you did grow up in a family like this. We think about the parable of the talents, and we wonder, how does God see my ability? We know that God has a perfect gauge on what our abilities are. And we think, what are my opportunities? And we know as well that God knows perfectly the opportunities that we've had in our lives. Am I a one-talent man or a five-talent man or somewhere in between? And we say, rightly, in making application from the parable, that there was no such thing as the zero-talent man. Everybody had ability and everybody had responsibility because of that. So let me make the application specifically to what we're talking about tonight. If you had this advantage, you start life with a greater opportunity and a greater responsibility than most. And when the Master comes and you stand before Him in judgment, you will be judged in part based on this. It is a great privilege, but with great privilege comes great responsibility, right? That's not in the Bible. But it's probably true. There is responsibility along with this. And of course, Jesus says this Himself. In Luke chapter 12 and verse 48, "For everyone to whom much is given, from him much will be required. And to whom much has been committed, of him they will ask the more. Much has been given to you, and much will be required from you." So be active. See this. See this privilege as a springboard for the rest of your life of faithful service. I've been taught, because I grew up in a family like this, how can I use it in teaching? I've been disciplined, because I grew up in a family like this, how can I show discipline in my own life? I've been influenced by parents like this. How can I use that influence to be salt and light and influence other people? I've been loved. So how can I show love to my fellow man? I've been protected from the world in a safe haven of rest. And so how can I be that safe haven where I can protect others from the world as well? All of these things that I have as a result of this environment, I need to use those in service to others because I will be judged based on this. Number four, be patient. Be patient with others who did not have this same privilege. Can you imagine Can you imagine growing up and not learning about God or Jesus or the Bible at an early age? For some of you, that's not very hard because that was the reality. You didn't learn about God or Jesus or the Bible as a child. But for many of us here, and I would include myself in this, I've never known a time in my life where I didn't know about God. From before I can remember, we studied together and we prayed together as a family. We came and worshiped God together. And we should all see that as the blessing that it is and be thankful for it, as we said, but also be patient with those who did not have that blessing. At least at first, when they're exposed to Christ and the gospel, they're playing catch up because they did not receive these same things. So we need to be patient. And then number five, we need to be expectant with others who did have this same blessing and privilege. My grandfather on my mother's side, Van Cash to most, Bapaw to me. Where did I come up with Bapaw? Just ask two-year-old me, I guess. I don't know where it came from. But Bapaw was an amazing judge of character when he was alive. He was the kind of guy, you know people like this, who could see through someone to who they really were. And not that he had some miraculous ability to see the heart. He was just really in tune with people. He had the ability to identify weaknesses in people, but he could also see potential in people, potential for strength, potential for leadership. And he had this ability to convict those with such potential to use it for higher purposes than just physical success. But I think there are a few things that bothered my grandfather more in life than when he looked at someone and he saw a bunch of weakness where there could and should have been strength. And he was the kind of guy who demanded more of people like that, sometimes more than they demanded of themselves, because they could do more. And he knew that God would judge them based on that. Now maybe we aren't as in tune to judge other people and their potential. But may I encourage all of us to have that same attitude of seeing potential in others, of having high expectations for other people, especially those who came from a background such as this. And here's what I mean by that. Turn to James chapter 4, if you would. James chapter 4 and verse 17. I'm going to talk about this verse in detail in a future sermon. But in James chapter 4 and verse 17, therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. If you were raised in a godly home, you know what good looks like. You know to do good. You know how to do good. You are able to identify good. You know what to do and how to do it. And so how shall you escape if you don't fulfill God's expectations for you? You know to do good, so do it. Because if not, to you it is sin because of the advantage that God has given you. And then finally, what do we need to be? Be aware, be thankful, be active, be patient, be expectant. If I had told you there were 6 points, you would have never thought I would have gotten through them this quickly. The last and final thing you need to be is be intentional. Be intentional about providing this same thing for your children. I don't know the home you grew up in. Well, a lot of you I do know. Good and bad, I know the home that you grew up in. But you're here now. And there are no changes that can be made to the home that you grew up in. But if your children are still at home, then you can make a choice about the kind of home your children are going to grow up in. Parents, the greatest advantage that you can give your children in this life is not sports or music or other extracurriculars. It is not education or money or status. It's not even manners and work ethic per se. But the greatest thing that you can give them is your love for the Lord, your love for your spouse, and your love for them. And that love should be manifested and clearly seen in your home It should be seen in the things that you do, and it should be seen in the things that you don't do. And if you think I'm preaching from a spot of perfection on this, then you don't know me very well. But I am preaching from a spot of conviction that this is what our children deserve. And there is no greater privilege that we can give them than to strive to raise them in this way. And if you don't know how, well, praise God. Look around. There are men and women, fathers and mothers who have raised their children in just this way. And the fruit of that is seen in their faithfulness and their love for the Lord. So reach out. Ask for help. Ask for guidance. Ask for prayers. And while I'm at it, pray for me and Stephanie and our children. Because this is what we want to provide for them. This is what you can give them. And it doesn't matter how much money you have. It doesn't matter what education they have access to. It doesn't matter how smart you are or how smart they are. It doesn't matter how good looking they are. We all think our kids are great looking. But whether that's true or not, this is something we can give them. And this is something that God emphasizes for us to give them. Especially to you fathers. You're commanded to raise your children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Are you doing your best to give them this? Because there's no greater privilege that you can offer them. And young people, don't think you're off the hook because you don't have any kids. You know where this starts? It starts with who you choose to marry. If you want this formula, someone who loves you, well, you can find that in someone who's not a Christian. But someone who loves your children, well, you can find that in someone who's not a Christian. But someone who shows that love and expresses that love through a godly lens, because God is love and God defines love, that will only be found with someone who loves the Lord. And so seek someone who loves the Lord, who loves the Lord more than they love you. Because it's not just your soul that's on the line, although that's true. Your future kids are counting on you as well. That you can create a home like this, a home that's filled with the Lord and filled with love. I've had many, many privileges in my life. I freely acknowledge that. You don't need to accuse me of being privileged. I admit it. I am. And so do you. You have privileges, and how do I know? Well, you're here. You're here tonight with a knowledge of God the Father. And that God has waited thus far in His long-suffering mercy and grace for you to be the person that He has called you to be. That's grace right there, isn't it? I'm not there yet, but God is waiting patiently for me to grow into that person. And may God continue to bless us all. And may we use those blessings, those advantages, and yes, those privileges in His service. If you're not yet a Christian tonight, become one. There's no greater choice that you can make than to put Christ on in baptism. And if you're already a Christian and you realize, let me throw this back up here. You realize that, yes, it is not just your brethren who are expectant of you, but God who is expectant of you to be who it is He has called you to be, to walk worthy of the calling by which you were called. And you realize maybe you just need help with that, encouragement, prayers, or maybe there's sin in your life that you need to make right even this evening. We ask you to come now while together we stand and while we sing.
God calling, yes, sir.